It's Saturday morning, and it's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
No, I'm Adam Van Wee.
And much to my surprise, we are both here in the studio today. It wasn't scheduled that way, but Adam kind of ran into a little trouble at an airport last night.
Oh, my gosh. It was miserable. Absolutely miserable. 7 hours sitting in Jack's airport, and only to find out my flight got canceled.
Trying to have a little fun with the boys in Cincinnati. Regular listeners probably remember Craig Beechler, who's
he's been on a number of times.
Yeah, he's an angel investor. He's been on in the studio with us and on the phone. And he has a very interesting life up there, and they were going to go. This is about an annual thing, right?
Just a little fun. Kind of just
whenever.
Yeah, just a bunch of the guys that I used to live. Be friends with when I lived up there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're having fun without me, and I'm and I'm working. So there you go.
Yeah, good things come to those who work, we hope. Anyway, we are both here and ready to go. There will be a lot to talk about today. First off, I'd like to welcome everybody back. You know the regulars are the ones that keep us going, and if you're new to the show, stick around for an hour, and I promise you'll learn some things today. There's just so much happening out there today. It's amazing. As you all probably know, lightning struck twice at Publix in the last 2 weeks with another big lotto winner.
And yep.
We spent pretty much the whole show last week talking about that particular event and what people should know about winning a lot of money like that. Safety and so on, and investing right on down. Well, that now there's two of them, and we didn't really get a chance to wrap up some of the concepts last week. So I was going to wrap them up this week, and then lightning struck again. So we're going to talk about this, the general concept of sudden wealth, which does not have to be a lottery ticket.
No, a lot of times it's an inheritance or a liquidity event, like you sell a business.
Yep. And it doesn't have to be tens of millions of dollars.
No.
It has to be more money than you've ever seen in one place in your life.
Yeah.
And then chances are you won't know what to do with it. So we're going to do all that, and we're going to put it in the context of the real big winners and the big winners and the routine. The first thing I'll tease you with before we get to the market wrap, the baby boomer generation is in the process right now of transferring $53 trillion worth of wealth to subsequent generations. That means there's going to be a lot of people afflicted with sudden wealth through inheritance or whatever. So listen up, and maybe you'll be one of them, or maybe you'll know some of them, and you can pass along some tips from us. And we're particularly qualified to talk about this because of reasons I'll give you shortly. But meanwhile, another week in the market.
Yeah, it was not good.
It didn't feel good. It didn't look good, and it didn't end well.
Yep. I blame it all on China.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
They're responsible for everything.
Yeah.
China and Joe.
And mostly China this week, though.
Mm-hmm.
The data coming out of China right now is pretty terrible. It's so bad.
How bad is it?
It's so bad that they stopped reporting the youth unemployment rate when it reached over 21%. They say they're tweaking the way they measure it.
But right.
Basically, they were saying, we're not going to tell you anymore because the numbers keep getting worse. And that is the only good thing I took away from that, though, was that if they're stopping reporting data, that means they were actually reporting accurate data. Because why else? Or otherwise, they just lie.
That's the first time I've ever thought about China reporting anything accurately.
I mean, why wouldn't they just lie and say everything's fine? So I figured they actually, that number is probably real. Youth unemployment probably is over 21% at this point. But I'm sure that stopping reporting will fix the problem. So that's good.
No, it's like the people that have funny noises coming from their car. They just turn the radio up.
Yeah, definitely.
Good. Good to go.
For several years, we've been saying on this program to stay out of China and don't, and it's not investable. I think I said that a couple of weeks ago.
And keep your money out of there too.
Yeah, it's just
not, all of the above.
Yeah, no, I mean from an investing perspective, but
just being myself.
It's turned out to be pretty good advice. GXC is the ETF that covers China. It's down 8% this year, and the 3-year annualized return is negative 14.2%. For Chinese tech stocks, it gets even worse. The ETF CQQQ is down 13% year-to-date and has a 3-year annualized return of negative 18.6. So it's lost 18.6% every year for 3
compounded.
Years. Compounded. Yeah, pretty bad. So that's the bad news right now, that it was a bad week in the market. All the indexes were down about 2%. The good news is that long-term yields are moving up. You may wonder why that's good news. It's actually good news on a number of fronts. For one, it really needs to happen for the yield curve to uninvert. So for a long time, we've seen short-term bonds paying more than long-term bonds. And from a finance perspective, that doesn't make a lot of sense because there is more of a time risk in long-term investments than short-term investments. So you should be rewarded for that with higher yields. But that hasn't been the case because the market's been saying that we're headed into this deep, dark recession that never seems to appear. And so they're saying that the short-term risk is higher than the long-term risk.
And they were proving their estimated outcome by virtue of the huge inversion on the yield curve.
Yeah, and it has a very good track record
to go away.
Of predicting recessions. And so now that's starting to shift. And if long-term treasuries continue to move the way they have, they'll probably go higher than short term, and you'll see a regular looking yield curve where the short end of the yield curve pays you less than the long end. And so that's nice. It's kind of saying that maybe there isn't going to be a recession, or it doesn't mean that maybe we're already in one and we're coming out of it. It's really hard to say at this point, but it is a move back towards normalcy from the weird place we've been in for almost 2 years now, I believe. The other good news is that this is a great buying opportunity for investors. So when you start seeing 10 to 30 year T-bills, treasuries, whatever you're looking at, CDs that are paying above 5, 6, 7% perhaps, that's something you're going to want to lock in, most likely. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been an opportunity like this in many, many years. In fact, right now, the 10-year Treasury just reached its highest level since 2007, and the 30-year Treasury just reached the highest yield since 2011. So we have not had this type of opportunity in a long time, and the potential is there for it to be more, go even higher. And so if you want a nice, solid return for the next 20 years, you know, 10 to 30 years, it's getting to the point where you might want to consider buying some of these things. So the
cool thing is we've got a transition period now where we're buying the real short ones, 3 months to 2 years, getting maximum yield on it. And during that time, that the whole inversion ought to be corrected. So as that money comes due, we start going longer and
Definitely.
Longer, getting the higher and higher yields. And that means there's a lot of people who do not have to mess with the stock market for their non-variable capital needs.
Which is a great thing.
It is a wonderful thing. It really helps people like us who are in the field. Well, lots more to say and lots more time to say it coming up right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. What is the most sold-off ETF of 2023 so far? The one that's lost its biggest percentage of shareholders in the last, where are we, 8 months and almost the end of 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
So year-to-date, the biggest sell-off. And as usual, it's kind of an interesting point. Meanwhile, we probably should wrap up where this market's going a bit.
Yeah, I've got a bit more to talk
about.
Yeah,
I think it's worth it for now.
I think it might surprise some people to learn, but this current pullback on the S&P, it's just 5%.
Yeah.
It feels a lot worse than that, but it's 5%. 5% is, it's just that. It's a pullback. It's not a correction. Yeah. It's really just normal trading is what it is.
Right.
the index has gone from overbought to oversold in just a few weeks. And that can actually be a really good thing, as it can attract more buyers. Sometimes the best thing is for an index to fall, although it never feels that way when it's happening. You may think that the S&P dropping below its 50-day moving average, which it did this week, would be a bearish sign, but the data actually says the opposite. Forward returns for the S&P 500 when it drops below its moving average are actually stronger than the historical norms. So that it's actually a positive sign. But on the flip side, when 10-year yields move higher as they've done, returns tend to be weaker than normal. So we'll see which one of those wins out. I'm not sure.
And the other thing we need to keep track of, the year-to-date returns in the market are still stellar.
Oh, very strong.
S&P's 13.8%.
Yeah, the only one that's a little weak is the Dow at 3%, but it's not that's not right, at 4.1%.
Right.
So yeah, that's the other ones are really strong, 13.8 and 27%.
And even
take
on
that all day.
Yesterday, when things were wrapping up a bad week and weren't feeling very good, the Dow managed a couple of points. But the one that shocked me was the small caps had a good day yesterday.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, the R2000 was in really positive territory.
Okay, well, that's a positive
sign.
That's
a real good sign, I
think. Definitely. Earnings season came to an unofficial close this week when Walmart reported pretty stellar earnings. Mm-hmm. We talked about Walmart a few weeks ago when we found out that 70-something percent of all Americans had shopped at Walmart in the last month.
Coincidental, wasn't it, that this came up right after that?
Yeah. Same store sales for them rose 6.3%. That's pretty stellar. It's higher than the 4% that was expected. Mm-hmm. As things get more expensive, where are people going to shop, though? I mean, go to the discount retailer. Why not?
Absolutely. And Target shed a few customers.
I was just going to mention that Target, they had a pretty poor sales report. Their sales dropped 5.4%, which is pretty awful. And their outlook for the rest of the year was also pretty bad. And they came out and admitted that there was a lot of backlash to their Pride Month display that featured some very unusual things. I don't think it wasn't because of Pride Month. It was the way that they did it.
Exactly.
It did not go over well. Overall, the earnings beat rate is at 69%, which puts it in the top 10% of earnings seasons on record. 69% seems really low because we've had all these great quarters post-COVID. Yep. But yeah, it's actually a pretty good number. And I made that mistake last week. I didn't think it was very good, but I went back and checked it against the record, and yeah, it's a pretty good one.
Yep.
What wasn't as good is the revenue beat rate. It's still above the average at 62.4, but not in the top 10%.
But there's an unspoken component in that one, and I think people ought to be aware of it. There's inflation, there's disinflation, and there's deflation. Most things don't deflate because that means the price comes down. But commodities, energy, food, a lot of those things actually vary in price in both directions. And what we're seeing right now is a lot of commodity deflation, which fits nicely in with the deceleration of inflation. So what's happening, the classic example is Home Depot. There is nothing wrong in my world with knowing that framing lumber goes for $420 in the third quarter from Home Depot, down from $715 in the second quarter.
Mm-hmm.
That means revenues are going to be down because they're selling it cheaper, which means more people can buy it.
Right.
So I am totally undisturbed about the fall in the revenue beat rate. It's just common sense that when you pay less for something, you can sell it for less. And if you look at some of these companies like Home Depot, their earnings are very, very good. So they're making as big a margin or bigger on the lower price because they can sell it for a much more user-friendly price, I guess.
Yeah.
It's all good, in other words.
Right. The inflation has helped companies' top and bottom lines to a degree. Now, it hurts them on the bottom line as well when you have to pay your employees more. But if you're selling the same amount of higher-priced goods, it's going to make your top line look better. And if you can do it without adding the same amount of cost, then it makes your bottom line look better too. So inflation, not necessarily a bad thing for corporate America. Bad for the consumer, though.
And I'm less than thrilled to tell you that the Fed thinks people are making too much money.
which is insane.
It is. When you look at what represents us, it's just a miracle that things are as good as they are.
I have a hard time believing it every time I talk about it, that the economy has remained as strong as it is.
It's the American spirit. It's the people who run private businesses. They tackle all this stuff. It's like every morning you wake up and there's a headwind. Sometimes you just want to crash your forehead down on the desk and cry because they're so stupid.
Speaking of which, retail sales came in stronger than expected yet again.
Yeah.
The American consumer just hit a record $1 trillion of credit card debt recently. And what do? Go out and spend some more. The biggest increase this month was, of course, online shopping. The biggest increase year over year was in bars and restaurants, which is up almost 12%. The biggest decline this month was in furniture and electronics. People are that post-COVID make your home better thing is starting. That trend is definitely on the way out.
Yeah, I can understand that. And again, a lot of those things are just cyclical.
Yeah.
And the cycle is now on the down. People are going back to an experience-oriented life again.
Definitely. Travel.
And bars and restaurants.
Europe this summer was the busiest it's ever been.
Yep.
You're seeing the bars and restaurants thing. That's people are going out and eating and doing things they couldn't do a few years ago. So yeah, it's all cyclical. You'll see that trend reverse as well.
And the mainstream media is trying to convince us that we should be wearing masks at home.
Because I have seen that
COVID's coming out.
So ridiculous. There was
these people have never spent 20 minutes with an actual person. Don't think.
I mean, masks have been proven to not work, and so now they're trying to get us to wear them again. Doesn't make any
COVID
sense.
COVID is spiking.
So?
Yeah, it's up. It's a little tiny tick up.
Yeah.
So is the heat wave. Isn't it funny? You know, global warming gets so much worse in June, July, and August. It's amazing.
At the airport yesterday, there was a handful of people wearing masks, as there always is. But most of them had them below their nose. Are you kidding me?
One of the comedians on Gutfeld's show the other night said he had gone to a recent show and the headliner was wearing a mask. It was really good, I think. He was a ventriloquist. I'm glad there are people who are able to make light of this because that's what makes it go round. Because, man, if you just listen to all the woe out there and then you watch what goes on in Congress and so on, you would be absolutely convinced that you should run away and hide. And that's just not the right reaction these days. Now we're getting back to school, and Florida's got a lot of tax-free dates that I'll probably wait till next week to go over just because of the events of the last couple of weeks. But people think of having a tax-free time, which is just a little back-to-school long weekend or something like that. That's not at all the way things work anymore, and I'll bring you up to date on that next week. You're going to be amazed what DeSantis is doing for the people of Florida, and they're scared of him because they're talking him down so hard, but he really is running the state very well.
Yeah, he has since he's gotten in.
Yeah, I'm happy to live here. All right, I can't think of anything I'd rather say about the market except the signs are still mixed as they have been for years.
Yeah, nothing's true.
I don't see a reason to think it's going to crash.
No, I don't think so either. Nothing's really changed. I mean, I did see where the guy, Michael, I can't remember his last name, from The Big Short.
The Big Short?
Yeah, he placed a huge bet that the S&P was going to go down, which, of course, you know, the media put as like the market's going to crash. It doesn't necessarily.
Yeah, because he's always right. Because he was right once.
He was right once. Yeah,
like Harry Dent.
Yeah, but there was a lot of people that came out and said that was not a great move. But you know, in the short term, maybe he makes a little bit of money and exits the position. Yeah. I don't know. It was you see things like this all the time, and the media, of course, loves when someone who got something right once does something again.
Yeah. And the people who write newsletters love it, too. And they say, well, I'm the one who predicted the crash of 08. Yeah, and you also predicted the crash of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13. And you can make a statistic do whatever you want to do if you've got a good computer and a bunch of numbers from the past. You don't don't pay too much attention to those people. They're just, they want your $350 a year, and they're not getting mine, that's for sure. All right, we're going to talk about, as I said, lightning striking again in Publix in Florida, and what to do when you're faced with sudden wealth, even if it's not gigantic. It's still a great big responsibility, and there are ways to handle it, and we know them. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And I remind everybody that the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is still out there. What is the most sold-off ETF for 2023 so far? All right. Well, a funny thing happened in the news this week, which sounded kind of like the news last week when some person from our area bought the correct lottery ticket at a Publix, this time on Roosevelt. And it seemed, at first glance, seemed a little bit paltry. It was only like $36 million, but that's because we've been talking about the $1.58 billion winner the week before. But one little winning of $36 million is anything but paltry. So the first thing I did, being the mathematical type guy I am, I did some calculations in my head and discounted it to net present value for the lump sum option, and then calculated the 25% withholding. And then we know that this person will be in the 37% tax bracket. So I added up the other 12% they'll owe. And I netted it out with what I think is a real accurate amount of cash that they're going to walk away from. And it came out a boatload.
Oh, that's very accurate.
Yeah. I think the boat is big enough that they're going to be good, but there are things they need to know. And meanwhile, good morning, Marshall.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all?
Wonderful. You?
I'm doing way too good. I don't deserve it.
Yeah, if I were any better, there'd have to be two of me.
I appreciate all your conversation about the lottery, because for those of us who don't even participate, meaning go buy the tickets, still to have that little dreaming exercise, I think is very good for everybody. It's a healthy thing.
Until you take it to the point where you use it as your total retirement plan, that's not healthy.
Yes, yes. But I think y'all know that prior to my world in reverse, I spent many years doing affordable housing. Mm-hmm. So I had the opportunity to see people who were on the edge of being able to afford their home and being able to get a home mm-hmm. and those type of scenarios. And I just hope people realize that distance between those of us who have planned and those who never really had a pot or a window is vastly increasing during this economy. So while we may be influenced positively by, okay, we adjust how we invest, don't forget all those people around you that are in the service world. They're struggling. They're really having it tough.
Yeah. The Fed doesn't think so, but I know so.
Well, a couple of times I've gotten disturbed by all the different people wanting to have tips, but I still put it in my mind. If I'm getting good service from someone that especially I suspect is not a very wealthy person or is working for a very nominal but giving great service, I try to be more generous with tips, and I would encourage others to do so as well.
I think that's a very nice thought, but what most of us have been turned off by lately is the in-your-face nature of the expectation. You don't even have to have service in some places when they want a tip.
Yeah, and the default is like 30%.
Yeah. And no.
Well, the pizza guy who got caught on the door camera, you know, all ticked off because he only got 20%.
Pretty nice house for a $5 tip.
Those people need to get thrown out.
Yeah,
well,
for sure.
I need to get back to y'all's dream process so I can pick up my day, but I just had to throw that 2 cents worth in.
Well,
okay?
We'll never be talking to you as a lottery winner because the first rule of the lottery is that the winner will always have a ticket. So,
yes. Gotcha.
I live and learn. Always fun. Good to hear you. Bye. Yeah. You know, I don't buy them. I have bought one or two over the years. We once, Sarah and I once won, I think it was $56.50, but we had split the ticket with a friend.
Oh, okay.
So we got half of that.
Really lowered your return.
Yeah, really did.
I did win $4 the other day. I spent $20 on tickets and I got $4 back.
Ooh, that's a good return.
Yeah.
Except for that investment.
I only play when it gets over, you know, $500 million or something. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, then why not? Anyway, the winner this week is going to be truly in the category of sudden wealth. But it doesn't take $36 million or $10 million or $5 million. Now, if you inherit $100,000 and you have nothing in the bank, you are suddenly wealthy, but not the kind that's going to last you a lifetime. And I don't think that your needs for professional services will be very high. But as I mentioned earlier, for those who tuned in time, this country is in the throes of a transfer of wealth from baby boomers down to the subsequent generations. It's estimated to be $53 trillion. And that means a whole bunch of people are going to come into a whole bunch of money. And they better know what to do with it. So we see it all the time in our day jobs as CFPs that people come in and they inherited this or that or whatever, and it can be $250,000, $500,000, $1 million. And that's a pretty nice little windfall for people. It may or may not last you forever, but we have seen so many mistakes that people make. The first one being they find out they're coming into the money and they quit their job because they've got so much. And we have seen this. We've seen it with $100,000, $200,000. The people quit work. And you can't imagine the stupidity of that until you really get into it, I guess. But if you've never seen that much money, then you think you're all of a sudden, what, filthy rich or whatever. Not true. So it's important to know what you're getting into. And it's important to know what you're going to do about it. There are two ways to look at planning, retirement planning. There's a wise old man that once said, it's always good to plan for an inheritance. It is never good to plan on an inheritance. And that wise old man was me, actually. And I'm both of those. Wise and old. And it's so true. Planning for an inheritance, we've seen it so bad that people are really sure they're going to come into lots and lots of money, and then the will is read, or the parents do what parents do so often, which is spend a whole boatload of money on their way out of this world. Medical expenses in the terminal days of people's life can literally drain what you expect for your inheritance. You should never plan on it. But planning for it, if you've been notified that you won a lottery ticket, that you're coming into an inheritance, or maybe you got lucky in the stock market, or something big is happening, you sold a house and got a windfall, then you should know what you're going to do with that money and how you're going to do it and with whom you're going to do it. Because otherwise, it'll flitter away. If you want to look at some real interesting life stories, Google or search somehow lottery winners that went broke. Pages and pages and pages of lottery winners go broke. Some of them with hundreds of millions of dollars have gone broke. There was one guy, Tennessee or Kentucky or someplace like that, he bought a little sports car convertible, and he used to throw money out the top of his car as he drove down the streets. Literally. I think his winnings were 350 $40 million. And in under 3 years, he was broke.
Wow.
You can't imagine that it would be even possible. But if you're literally throwing money out your car, you'd be amazed how fast you can go through money.
That would accelerate it.
Lots more of them get in trouble because they don't understand the tax ramifications. Good news for those of you who inherit money or are going to. You won't have that problem. Unlike lottery winners, which Uncle Sam really loves because of your impending donations to the coffers, inheritors do not pay taxes. That taxes are paid from the estate prior to you receiving it. I've been asked that question so many times I can hardly remember, and it's one of my favorite questions because we get the answer to the person, you won't have any taxes.
Nope, and people are always surprised.
It makes their day, mm-hmm. and it makes my day to see somebody else's day made because of something we can tell them. So if it's happening to you, understand that. That is not license to piddle it all away.
No, in fact, it actually comes with a great responsibility.
It is. And
it's kind of like you're running a small company at that point with that amount of money.
Or
if it's
even
a large
big company.
Well,
you're the CEO
on the amount
of your family business.
Right.
And you should treat your shareholders like they'd want to be treated because the shareholders are you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet people don't look at it as a business.
No, they don't. But the smart ones do, and the successful ones that we have seen do.
Yes, and I'm going to get into more of this after the break. But the single biggest thing that I've ever conveyed to someone, and I believe this with all my heart, if you want to stay wealthy, don't spend the principal. How do you not spend the principal? You plan first. And how do you regulate it on the way? And this is the key. Sign your own checks. When you come into money, sign your own checks. Even if you need people to help you put them all together and print the checks and all that stuff, you sign your own checks. You'll know exactly where your money is going. And if you let somebody else do it, you can probably say that some of it's going to a place where you wouldn't want it. Much more when we come back into the last segment. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our trivia question is still open. What's the most sold-off exchange-traded fund of the year thus far? And lines are open, so if you want to take a shot at it or just want to talk about something, we're here at 222-8255, right here in the 904. So, rules for sudden wealth. Depending on the size of what you're coming into, and I say that even kind of loosely, don't tell people.
No.
Maintain your privacy. You will be amazed how many friends you have that you didn't even know were your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen this over and over and over. Now, if you've got a lot of money, you have to stay even more private. And in Florida, you do not have to identify yourself for a while. And you never have to have your picture taken with the big check and your smiley face where people can recognize you walking down the street. Trust me, they're going to find you anyway. But stay private and stay safe. And the dust will eventually settle, even for the biggest ones, because there'll be a new flavor of the month somewhere. Like the billion and a half is probably going to take a while to settle, even given the $36 million. But that $36 million in a year will be largely forgotten because of the bigger ones. So yeah. It's important to do that. Depending on the size of what you're coming into, the media will be on your case, especially for the billion and a half. And I don't mean just local media. I mean national media and international media. Learn to say no thank you to interview requests.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to leave off the thank you after a while because you're so irritated with these people, I'm good with that. All right, goal setting. What can this money do for you long term? And that is not something that most people are going to be good at doing themselves. And a lot of it is because most people's financial education is woefully non-existent, practically. How many of you truly balance your own checkbook every month, and how many don't? Do your kids do that? Probably not. So your number one goal is to get educated about money, stocks, bonds, insurance, exchange-traded funds, every aspect of money that's going to affect you. Take your sweet time. Choose wisely when you get a financial advisor. And now it's shameless self-promotion minute. You can live with that, can't you?
Yeah, take it away.
Yes. The advisor you want should be a fiduciary, fee-only, certified financial planner using a registered investment advisor. We know of one. It's called Van Wee Financial, and the website is vanweefinancial.com. We have experience with lottery winners, and have been through the process more than once. We are both CFPs. We both have technical undergrad degrees. We are both MBAs. We're probably the most educated two people who have a small company like this anywhere around. And we deal with all of our people together, not one or the other. So it's basically a two for one. That whether or not you come up with us, the rules remain pretty much the same. And one of them that's going to be very hard for a lot of people is when you come into some money, you don't owe anybody any part of it. You don't have to go back to Publix and find the person who sold you the ticket and give them a big tip. The lottery people tip the store. You owe them nothing. You will have family members who feel that they're absolutely obligated to share your wealth or your winnings. You're not obligated to do that. It sounds like you have to be kind of hard-ass, and you do, actually. We've seen it over and over and over. Expect to have interpersonal conflict with friends and family. And, of course, we're not talking about the $100,000 and the $150,000 inheritance now. But when you get up into serious money, when you're taking home seven digits and above, most of these things are going to prove to be pretty much true.
I could make a pretty accurate prediction and say you will lose touch with one of your family members over the money. I think that's inevitable.
I think that's absolutely true. Again, we've seen it, and it is true.
And it might not be the one you think it's going to be.
That's true, too. Funny part. All right. When you're dealing with your financial advisor, if you haven't satisfied all those things, you're probably going to wind up getting asked to write a check to the advisor by name or a fund that the advisor supposedly runs. Never, ever, ever write a check that has your financial advisor's name on it. Always make sure that any money that goes into your investments is available for you to see 24/7, 365 on an independent third-party website such as Schwab or Fidelity, people you know about. If you can't see it, it's likely to be gone soon. I report on these things on the show for 21 years. I've been reporting on the radio program about advisors who stole the money from people. And every time I admonish the people that they are as responsible as is the shyster advisor. If you allow your money to go somewhere that you can't see, shame on you. Remember this and say it to yourself every day. I can complete this sentence. If it sounds too good to be true, comma, you know how to answer that. And it's true. You can't get 38% guaranteed safe returns in a market where interest rates are 1, 2, 3, or even 5, 6, or 7. It does not work. Try to figure out what your goals are. This is where your financial advisor comes in, and this is why I say you should get a certified financial planner. Everybody would like their accountant to be certified public accountant or CPA. Why not have your financial advisor certified CFP? We both maintain ours, and it requires a lot to do it. It was not easy to get there. It requires a lot of education, a lot of practice, passing a big exam, and ongoing work to keep you up to date. It's worth it. It's worth it to us. It's worth it to our clients. And it shows because our business has taken off big time. We're in year 9 now. These are just the start. When your planner should come to you and start developing goals with you. A lot of people want to get out of debt. That's a worthy goal, usually. Yeah. It might not be quite as important as you think it is.
So. Yeah, especially if you have a really good mortgage or
exactly.
2 or 3%. And yeah, there's reasons that you might not want to do that. Now, if you have credit card debt, I mean,
that goes.
Wipe it right away.
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
What's happening?
Nothing much. Article in Barron's was very interesting about in the year 2033, the average Social Security recipient will lose, with no changes, $17,400.
Yep. And that...
Interesting.
And I actually have that on my topics for next week, too, about... How to correct Social Security?
There are many ways that this could be addressed. The problem is it's such a hot button issue politically that no one. I don't know if you remember. I think it was Bush who brought it up. Suggested making some changes, and it. I mean, he got destroyed for bringing it up. It was it was bad. Now no one wants to touch it.
The only one who got away with it and solved the problem for a long time is Ronald Reagan. It took the master of persuasion to get it on the table, but he got it done. But now it's come, as you say, there's two estimates I've read, 2032 and 2033. Both of them are right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's been three leading suggestions over the years, and I would think if they would just take a little of each of those suggestions, they could probably remedy most of the problem, but... We'll see.
Like
anyhow,
I think I'm going to be talking about that some next week. It's a good topic.
Very good. Quick shot at the trivia?
Sure. Absolutely.
Thank you. Elon Musk sold off a lot of Bitcoin, and even though Bitcoin doesn't really have ETFs, there are Bitcoin mining ETFs. So I'm going to just take a wild guess, maybe BITO, B-I-T-O.
That's a great guess.
It's a great guess. Really, it's not the right one, but it's a great one.
Yeah, you're thinking along the right lines.
And there are cryptocurrency ETFs being formulated right now. Most people think they're going to be allowed on the market in the next several weeks anyway.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they don't make it.
And you know what? I'm going to look at each one of them and not buy it.
Same here.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
Mike, I appreciate it. Thank you. All right, since we're kind of winding down here, the most sold of all of the ETFs is an iShare. The symbol is ESGU, and it's full of ESG companies, environmental, social, and governmental. And we have been talking about this. Adam's particularly been on the case for a long time. The reason... that people are kind of falling out of the bed with these things. They charge you 40 or so.
40 basis points.
Basis points.
If you buy the regular index, you're probably paying less than 10 basis points. If you buy the ESG index, you're paying 40 plus.
Yeah. And so, they underperform.
Yeah. And part of it is because of that excess charge. But iShares sure loves when you buy it.
iShares really does. There's so much more to say on this stuff, but if you know someone who's coming into money or if you are doing it, call somebody like us and at least talk about it. It's just too important, and too often people wind up on the wrong side of things, including a couple of them dead. We don't want that for anybody, especially around here. See you next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.